It may seem a bit unusual to cite a young composer who grew up in a bell tower in Bohemia as a fitting model as we introduce a music festival opening this evening in Wayne County. Miloš Šafranek tells the tale this way. Bohuslav Martinů was born in the same region as Smetana in the small town of Polická in eastern Bohemia in 1890, and the spirit of his native countryside, which has something at once modest, shy, and deeply inspiring, influenced Martinů's work from childhood on. He grew up in the tower of the Polická church where his father was employed. Only seldom did he descend to the town. He spent practically his entire childhood isolated in the tower, devoted to music, looking down from above and from a distance upon life in the town and in the beautiful countryside. He began composing around 10 and never let up. Martinů left what was then Czechoslovakia for Paris in 1923, moving directly into the center of the European avant-garde movement. The modest room in Paris where Martinů lived was filled with scores of Bach choral music and the operas, symphonies, and sonatas of Mozart, as well as works of Palestrina, Corelli, Orlando di Lasso, the English madrigalists, and many other compositions which never grow old. So it's not by chance that Martinů's works number so many chamber music compositions, and that in the list of his orchestral works, there are so many titles inspired by the Baroque era. Partita, Inventions, Ricercari, Concerto Grosso, Double Concerto, and Sinfonia. And we'll keep his immersion in early music and the Baroque in mind as we learn from Nancy Wren that the early years in Paris marked a period of assimilation for Martinů, who disliked much of the avant-garde music of his new environment. Having been captivated by Impressionism, Martinů found it hard to adjust to Paris's latest musical thought. But in 1924, his attitude changed when he discovered Stravinsky's captivating chamber work, L'Histoire du Soldat, The Soldier's Tale. And the recently premiered ballet, Les Noces. These works in particular pushed Martinů to finally embrace the musical trends and idioms of his surroundings. We learn from the Los Angeles Philharmonic that jazz had manifested itself in Martinů's work before he landed in Paris during the city's jazz age, his foxtrots from 1919 and 1920, for example. But the swinging new sound settled into his compositions for an extended stay in the late 20s. His first three operas in particular bear the stamp, most notably The Three Wishes, in which he calls on banjos, saxophones, and flexitones to perform, in addition to a full orchestra, for its film within an opera set in New York City. Martinů's first substantial foray into jazz, though, was with La Revue de Cuisine, a one-act ballet he wrote in 1927, the four-movement suite filled with wit and absurdist humor. The music has a light, self-aware quality, and the jazz elements fit the story's tone like a glove. These include a lively, trumpet-led Charleston, the American flapper dance that was enjoying its peak when Martinů wrote this work, and a slinky tango, a rhythm native to Latin America, but which invaded Paris at the beginning of the jazz age. The distinctly blue clarinet is spotlighted, swinging in the Charleston and lightening the march that opens and closes the suite. So Similar instances of Martinu's use of jazz idioms is seen in his sextet for woodwinds and piano, written in 1929. Having already lived in Paris for 6 years, Martinu was developing an ability to incorporate popular music and jazz elements into his compositions in a graceful and natural way. Like his ballet on the kitchen theme 2 years earlier, Martinu's sextet portrays his comfort in integrating jazz and popular idioms into his music. He composed his sextet for the unique combination of piano, flute, oboe, clarinet, and two bassoons in the span of 8 days. Echoing a neoclassical influence, this work is structured into 5 short movements: preludium, adagio, scherzo, blues, and finale. His most overt nod to jazz is seen in this movement, the 4th movement, titled Blues. It's not only the movement's name that illustrates Martinu's penchant for jazz elements. Following a relaxed, slow introduction, Martinu presents a sprightly dance that emulates the surrounding dances of the day, the foxtrot, Charleston, and tango. The Charleston rhythm was first introduced by James B. Johnson in 1923, the dance rhythm that stands as a lasting theme song of the Roaring Twenties. Now, here's what is a key for us. It is no coincidence that the sextet resembles the 18th century divertimento, among the musical forms that Martinu turned to for inspiration. Rather than emulating the ever-popular Mozart or Haydn, Martinu turned most often to the scores of Arcangelo Corelli, whose Concerti Grossi and Sonata da Camera exuded a clarity of design and musical vitality that Martinu particularly admired. He would continue to experiment with both Corelli's Concerto Grosso and Sonata da Camera through the 1930s. That from Nancy Wren. We are invited to hear music of Bohuslav Martinu and more at the Dyberry Creek Music Festival, which opens this evening in Honesdale at the Wayne County Arts Alliance Gallery. As it happens, this evening will feature Martinu, who especially admired the works of the Baroque, as we've heard. So Telemann will be on tap, too. And Villa-Lobos, who had a passion for Bach. Oh, more influence from the Baroque. Those pieces and more. And we begin to see a pattern. And, as we'll learn, the underlying theme of the Dyberry Creek 2026 Festival is the coming together of classical and jazz traditions. Traditions embraced by bassist Michael Geib, who wanted to found a chamber music festival in this very place, even though he and cellist Merrill Geib live in Oklahoma. Dr. Geib and Merrill Geib paid a visit to the WBIA studios to talk with us about how this all fits together.
I grew up just over the state line in New York in the Hudson Valley, but my maternal ancestors settled in Wayne County in the 1860s. And I've moved around a lot in my life just because of the nature of being a musician. Because when somebody offers you a job, you usually say thank you, not I don't know. So living in many states and different time zones, there's been a lot of change, but the one constant in my life has been coming back to this area in Wayne County. And whether it was when I was a child, coming up here to visit family and grandparents, or now growing up, I mean, same thing, there's still familial ties. But all of this really started to percolate on the couch in 2020, in case we forgot. But I said, you know, when this is over, what if we did this? Because one of the inspirations for this was that Honesdale is not that far from a lot of big cities in this country. We're just a few hours from New York City, from Philadelphia, etc. But one of the differences that we've noticed from living in Oklahoma and living in Oklahoma City is that We often will do what we call run out concerts to places that are 2-3 hours away, rural places, that towns that maybe have just a few hundred people. And it's not unusual for us to have a concert that's a few hours away, but yet Honesdale being close to some of the musical meccas in this world, there didn't really seem to be a lot of classical music and chamber music there. Which seemed odd to me, but I also understand that those musicians in those giant metropoli, dare we say, they don't have to go that far away for gigs. And look, you're always factoring in travel and things like that. So that was the inspiration. And so in 2022, with the help of the Wayne County Community Foundation, we were able to start the Diberry Creek Music Festival. And I thought it was going to take a lot longer, but I was on a Zoom call with Ryan Jennings, and she said, no, we can get you under our umbrella. You don't have to start your own nonprofit. And before I knew it, that summer, here we are.
Tell us the significance of Diberry for people who live halfway across the state and don't know the territory.
Well, we were looking for a way to tie in the geography of the region. And for those that maybe live in Philadelphia or Pittsburgh that are listening, lest we forget that parts of Pennsylvania are very rural. And there's a lot of just natural beauty in this part of the state. It's very hilly, and there's a lot of natural rivers, streams, lakes, etc. And we were looking for something to tie to the festival that could also relate to some of the geography of the area. And we looked at other names, maybe tying it to like something Sturbridge, you know, in Honesdale. But if you look up Sturbridge, you see the Sturbridge Lion and other things like that. And a lot of people have tied things to Washington Irving in Honesdale. In this modern age, we're thinking about search engine optimization, right? So what could we find that would be unique enough that would also be something that could relate to the geography? So the Diberry Creek runs into downtown Honesdale, and which then eventually comes down into Lackawanna County. But it's one of the main pieces of geography for which the town was built around. Now, there are some other Diberry Creek things. There's a Diberry Creek farm, and Brian and Eve are wonderful. Please follow them on Instagram, and they have Entlebooker puppies, which are a very unique type of dog. And they have also hosted many of our musicians before. So that's the other Diberry thing that relates to us. There's also a town of Diberry, but there wasn't a lot about them on the internet necessarily. But that's where the name came from. And so it was a way to showcase not just the music, but also relate it to the natural beauty of the area.
Now let's go back to Oklahoma and tell our listeners what you do in Oklahoma.
So I live in Edmond, Oklahoma, which is just north of Oklahoma City, Thunder Up. And I am a professor at the University of Central Oklahoma, which is the oldest institution of higher learning in the state. It was founded in 1890 as the Territorial Normal School, before Oklahoma was incorporated as a state. So I've been there for 15 years, because remember what I said about in the arts, you know, when somebody offers you a job, you say yes. And I'd never even been to Oklahoma before I'd interviewed. But when I saw its proximity to Oklahoma City and went out there to interview, there were just so many things that I fell in love with about the place, and it's just been great to me. It has its peculiarities if the weather is something that one has to get used to, but we're definitely safe there. We have the best meteorologists in the world. But being there as a musician, I'm a professor there. I also am the general coordinator for the Brisch Center for Historical Performance, which is the oldest institution for historically informed performance in the state of Oklahoma. And for those that don't know about historically informed performance, the idea is to try to recreate concerts as they would have been experienced, say, 200 or 300 years ago. In fact, in the 2024 Diberry Creek Music Festival, we brought an ensemble on tour as part of the Brisch Center that collaborated with the Diberry Creek Music Festival. So we had viola da gambas, we had lutes, we had theorbos, and we performed a short Baroque opera, and it was a wonderful experience. And what else? I'm the orchestra manager for the Painted Sky Opera, and I co-run a private studio with my wife called Guide Music with a K, and we just try to stay very active in our musical community. But the music business takes you crazy places, and you never know who you're going to meet or what you're going to do, because it's actually through living in Oklahoma that I've become very active with the Recording Academy, which is the institution that runs the Grammys. And through contacts there, I became a Grammy voter in 2024. And so shortly after, I think the festival happened in 2024, I got the official email. And that's been a wild ride. But that happened very specifically because of living in the Oklahoma City Metro and meeting some of the contacts there. And we have a really, really tight-knit chapter with a lot of exciting projects. So that's a little bit about what we do out there, but we like to tie it into both bringing music to Wayne County and also as a way to give back to this community that has meant so much to me for my entire life.
I think that our listeners would be interested in knowing that not only do you have an expertise in historically informed performance and classical music, but you also are someone who is very serious about jazz.
Oh, yes. Jazz is how I got into the music, just the music business. And I thank my teacher, Delbert Felix, who's somebody I met in South Carolina. He played in Branford Marcellus's group for a long time and has some stories about it. And I saw Branford in 2017 when he came through the OKC area. And he's talking to people and he's being very nice. But then I mentioned, I said, oh, hey, Delbert Felix is my teacher. And all of a sudden our conversation completely changed. I don't know if he remembers that, but I do. But it was because of Delbert and because of playing jazz and improvising that I really kind of got into music in the first place. And for anyone that's interested, I have a few albums out there. One is a classical solo album, but the other two are original jazz pieces. But a lot of people, they see a world that's very different, but I see a world that is extremely connected, especially with the historical performance. I mean, what is basso continuo but the original walking bass line? Or when we're talking about chord realization, I mean, how is that not a form of organized improvisation? Or never mind our cadenzas that didn't used to be written out for us, and embellishments, etc. I mean, I could go on and on. But I just see the connections. And that's one of the things that I think with music, we have the power to do that, whether it's with our audiences or whether it's with our colleagues. But we have a way to connect with people, which seems more important than ever.
And you're going to give us a feeling of how that works in the music you've chosen for this festival.
Absolutely. Specifically with our jazz and classical crossover, dare we say, our Friday and Saturday concerts. Friday, we're going to be at the Himalayan Institute at the Sunset Pond. And Saturday, we'll be at the Cooperage, which is in downtown Honesdale on Main Street. Both concerts are at 7:30. But one of the pieces that we're playing is written by Claude Bolling, and it's a piece for flute, and he writes it as jazz piano trio. Now, for those that don't know, when you say piano trio or jazz trio, it typically refers to a piano, upright bass, and drum set. And what I love about this piece is that while the piano part and the flute part are through composed, where what they're playing has been conceived by the composer, the bass and the drum parts are more organized like what you'd see in a jazz big band chart. Sometimes there's something very specific. Other times there's more a general set of instructions, and we have a lot more freedom to improvise something that we think is appropriate with the music. And this piece was chosen partially because one of our very generous donors, Pat Sanders, loves the flute, but also because I wanted to find a way to bridge the worlds that I care about and show that, oh, these things aren't so different. In fact, composers have been trying to merge them for some time. And Claude Bolling actually has multiple suites like this. So we're doing the first one just because that was something that Mira and Sam preferred to do for this particular festival. But both suites are great. There's great recordings out there. There's lots of great videos of them. And that's just one part of the festival.
Baroque and blue is one of the movements, isn't it? So that even in the naming of the movements, right?
Yes,
that's exactly. Before we move on, you mentioned the players, and you have an outstanding lineup of guest artists here. The flutist is someone distinguished whom you could tell us about.
Absolutely. So our featured artists this year are going to be Mira McGrill playing the flute, and Mira has played with a number of groups in New York City, would sub on Broadway, also has performed at the Metropolitan Opera, among other places. And I know Mira because of my relationship with her dad. Her dad, Sam McGrill, who's a composer, is somebody I work with at UCO. And what's so funny about Sam is that in addition to being my colleague, he's also our neighbor. So we know him quite well. And we end up on dog walks together in our neighborhood. And we've known each other and collaborated for years and years and years. And one thing with Sam is that his family, well, he lives in the middle of the country like we do. His family lives on either coast, either the East Coast or West Coast. And what a great way to not just bring music together, but bring families together, which is so wonderful. And our drummer this year is named Ronan Yitzik, and he's coming in and doing us a huge solid by playing, because originally we had Dan Pugash, who's another great friend that I've met through all of the Recording Academy activities I mentioned earlier. But there was a family emergency, and so he unfortunately won't be able to play. But I'm so excited to have Ronan, because after we were chatting, we realized we both went to FSU. So go Noles. And then all of a sudden, we felt an instant bond just because of the strength of the jazz program there and all the players and everybody. So we're really, really excited about having him as well. And last but certainly not least, we will also be featuring some pieces for cello and flute, and my wife Meryl will be performing. And there's another wonderful piece on the program by Margaret Bonds. That will actually be on the Wednesday program only. We won't have that Friday and Saturday. But that piece is called Troubled Water for cello and piano. And Meryl did a wonderful recital back in January. It was called A Cellist's Journey Through the Americas, featuring composers from North, South, and Central America. And this was just one of the pieces, but it was my personal favorite on the concert. And I think a lot of the crowd felt that way too. So we want to perform it again.
Does it have the influence of a spiritual?
Yes, Troubled Waters has the influence of a spiritual. And Margaret Bonds originally wrote it for solo piano. And this is her arrangement for cello and piano, written for Kermit Moore, and restored by a wonderful researcher. But we now have access to it. It was unpublished for many years.
It just occurs to me when I think about the remarkable sound that your instrument makes, the cello, it's almost, isn't it like a voice that it would be? You could hear someone singing this as a spiritual as you play it.
You hit the nail on the head. The cello, it encompasses the entire range of the human voice. And so we have what the bass singer would sing all the way up to a coloratura.
And I may regret saying this as a bass player, because I love my instrument and I love the sound that it makes, but we spend a lot of time as bass players performing music that's written for cello because we just don't have the same breadth of repertoire. But whenever I hear it played as it's intended, we'll take the cello suites by Johann Sebastian Bach, and those have become very popular for bass players, especially for orchestra auditions. And on our best day, we cannot sound as good as a 10-year-old playing the prelude of the first Bach cello suite, because it's written for the instrument. It sings, and the vibration just fills your body. And on our best day, we just can't make it sound that way. And I may upset some of my bass brethren. Sorry, not sorry. But it's when you play something that not only is written for a specific instrument, it helps it sing, but there's just something about the range of the cello that can't really be replicated with anything else. I will say that selfishly, one of the reasons, not the only one, but a reason that I wanted to start this festival is that double bass players don't often get to play in classical chamber music. We get to play jazz, but for those bass players that do play jazz, but our role is very much on the outskirts for classical chamber music, unlike cello, which is part of the string quartet, or it's part of the piano trio, or it's part of the string trio, and never mind all of the solo music. And there's wonderful chamber pieces specifically that may feature the bass as a soloist or as an accompaniment instrument. So that was one of my very selfish reasons for starting it. But a lot of times, just like with recording gigs or any other types of projects, you work with what you have, or it's based on who's available, what's available. And with the Martinu not only being a very uplifting piece that showcases the instruments in a very positive light, it also fits into just the practical logistics of who we were going to have. I will say that I kind of built the festival this year around the bowling. We started there because I said, hey, I want flute. I want a way to maybe also show the bridge between the classical and the jazz worlds. Let's start there. Let's see what we can do. And then we've built the rest of the program from there.
And the locations you've chosen, the gallery, the Cooperage Project, even outdoors at the pond, you've played there before, so you know what to expect. But each one of those, different and wonderful as each is, they give us the sense of the intimacy. We're going to be right there with you as you breathe and play that way. We're there with you, right?
Absolutely. Especially in the Wayne County Arts Alliance. They have a wonderful studio space on Main Street in Honesdale, although it is small. But it is chamber music, right? It is written for small spaces. And we usually try to align the festival with the Wayne County Arts Alliance Studio Artists Tour. And please go to their website and check it out, because you can drive around Wayne County and you can visit all of these wonderful artisans. And there's one actually on the road to our house. And we pass it, there's a bear sculpture. So it's wonderful. But just tying in all of the great things that are happening in the community. The Cooperage and everything that they're doing down there are just such a gift to the community. And that space is great because it's using a historical building, but it's big enough to where you can have some larger ensembles in there, but it's small enough to where it still feels quite intimate. And it was a push to fit our little Baroque troupe there a couple years ago, but we did, and it worked quite well. And again, it felt very intimate. The Friday concert at the Himalayan Institute will be outside. And I just checked the weather. Everything's looking to be... There might be some showers early in the day, but we should be just fine. The musicians will be covered, but it's in a beautiful setting by a pond under a pavilion that was completed a couple of years ago. And that, again, is also because some of our donors asked for an outdoor concert experience. I have mixed feelings about outdoor concerts, because on the one hand, you can have a very beautiful experience in nature, which is what the festival is about, again, being related to the geography and topography of the region. But also, outdoor concerts, just like outdoor weddings or anything, you have to contend with the elements. So it's just part of it. But we had a great experience a couple years ago, and I know we'll have another great one again. And there were just many ways to experience the music. And I'll remind the listeners that every concert is free.
Now tell us a little bit about how we find out more.
Absolutely. So you can visit our website for all of the festival information, and that is dieberrycreekmusicfest.org. Dieberry is spelled D-Y-B-E-R-R-Y, so dieberrycreekmusicfest.org. And there you can find our concerts and programs. You can find biographies and information about all of the artists. You can find past programs. You can find past videos. You can also find links to the calendar events and also Facebook events that people that want to do that. We also have social media profiles on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. And there are Facebook events for each of the concerts if some of the people would like to find out that way. And you can give us a follow, or please visit our website and you'll find all of the information you need.
Dr. Michael Guy, bassist, educator, and founder of the Dieberry Creek Music Festival in Wayne County, with Merrill Guy, who is a cellist and educator, speaking with us about the 2026 festival that opens this evening, July 8th at 5 at the Wayne County Arts Alliance in Honesdale. There will be other performances, the 10th at the Himalayan Institute outside by the pond, and that's at 7:30 p.m. And they're going to also have a performance at the Cooperage Project, and that's Saturday at 7:30. It is the 2026 Dieberry Creek Music Festival, July 8th through the 11th, at various venues through Wayne County. And this evening at 5 at the Wayne County Arts Alliance, and then Friday the 10th at 7:30 at the Himalayan Institute. That's an outside performance. And then Saturday at 7:30 at the Cooperage Project. Each of these performances is free, and you can check all of their social media, but the website is dieberrycreekmusicfest.org. dieberrycreekmusicfest.org, D-Y-B-E-R-R-Y, dieberrycreekmusicfest.org. And if you'd like to find out more about Michael Guy and his recordings, It is G-E-I-B. G-E-I-B.